Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Goddess Guidance Show. I'm your co-host, Shakti Devi. If I can remember my name is Shakti Devi. And I have here with me Naki Alayo, who's also co-hosting our show today. Say hi, Naki.
Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for being with us today.
Yes, we have a pretty interesting topic to talk about today, and that is working with the moon. We're kind of changing it just a little bit. It's the same with working with the moon. We'll talk about some of the things that you can do during the different phases of the moon, but excuse me for clearing my throat here. For some reason, I have something in the back of my throat. Anywho, I'd like to start our topic off by talking about a little bit more about some of the ancient practices of having a moon calendar or a lunar calendar is what it's referred to. So kind of think about in ancient times, the way that they, you know, modeled their daily activities is usually through a calendar of sorts, right? So in ancient Egypt, I'm going to first start talking about ancient Egypt and how ancient Egypt basically had, or ancient Kemet, had three kind of calendars. One was a solar calendar, so that had to do with the motions and whatnot of the sun. They had a stellar calendar, which had to do with the star constellations and when they appeared in the sky in certain seasons and certain times of the year. And then they also had a lunar calendar. And remember, with ancient peoples, they had a sense of cosmic orientation, meaning that they had a relationship with the natural world around them. In this day and age, we don't have as much of a relationship with the natural world to that degree. So, for example, you know, there are certain seasons where there are certain types of activities that we can do, like, right, in the springtime, you can go outside, you can enjoy some of the warm air. In the summertime, you can go play or, you know, school is out or something like that, right? You can go swimming because it's typically hot. In the wintertime, it's cold, so you're not going to go do certain activities, you know, during the wintertime because it's too cold to do certain things. So in our Western world today, that is something that you know, we do have a relationship with the seasons in that respect, but not in terms of the deep cosmic relationship that ancient peoples had. So I'm going to talk a little bit about ancient Egypt or ancient Kemet. I'm sorry, I keep changing my words here, but talk a little bit about ancient Kemet and how they viewed their lunar calendar. And then I'll segue into talking about the Vedic astrology. If you guys are familiar with astrology, there's a Vedic astrology that comes out of India, and I'll talk about how the what the different phases of the moon mean and what kinds of activities are favorable during these different kinds of moons in India. And there's some similarity that's there between these two ancient cultures. So in ancient Kemet, obviously, you don't have current practitioners. Ancient Kemet is a civilization that is no longer in existence. However, there are strains of it in different cultures. India is a little bit more fortunate because a lot of the ancient practices, they have continued up until today. So, anywho, hopefully, you know, that was a good start to the show. I'm laughing over here. So, I apologize. So as I was saying, you know, there's a direct relationship between the with ancient peoples and the moon in particular. I mean, think about it. We do have some kind of relationship with the moon. Here in the United States, we talk about the full moon and how the emergency rooms just get filled because people go crazy during the full moon, right? According to Vedic astrologers, they would say the moon represents our mind. And, you know, during the full moon, it's like your mind is on blast. So whatever emotions or thoughts, good or bad, positive or negative that you have going on, it just gets amplified during the full moon. So we do have that understanding that for some of us that the full moon, you know, just kind of creates this, can create emotional turmoil, and that the emergency rooms sometimes are fuller during the full moon, right? But we don't necessarily have, we don't have a lunar calendar, obviously, here, here in the United States. But in ancient Kemet, one of the spiritual realities transmitted in the in these traditions, in this tradition, is that all of life is dependent upon nature's rhythms, their seasons, and as well as the cycles. So of these, the two luminaries, the moon and the sun, luminaries meaning, you know, the brightening. So moon can be bright during the nighttime, during certain phases, and the sun obviously is a bright light that sends light to the moon and it's reflected, right? The sun and the moon represent rhythms that are particularly relevant to human life. So looking at the moon, let me put it this way. Scholars believe that a lunar calendar was the first invention for tracking time in ancient Kemet. So it first starts with that very first visible sliver of light from the crescent new moon, right? Excuse me. And you have a cycle of 29 and a half days that were observed from that first crescent of the new moon. And then, 29 and a half days from new moon to new moon. So you can actually track time based on the phases of the moon, you know. And this also created two kind of cycles. They call it hemicycles, but, you know, don't get too caught up into the terminology here. But you have 14 and a half days of waxing moon, of the waxing moon, which means the moon is going from actually not being visible at all from the new moon to growing in terms of its light. So it goes from the new moon, it goes to a sliver and all these different phases until it becomes the full moon. That's 14 and a half days. There are also 14 and a half days from the full moon to the new moon as well, right? And so this flux of waxing and waning light in the sky is really deeply embedded in the symbolism of the lunar phenomena is what we call it. So at the beginning of the lunar cycle, the new moon, the sun and the moon are actually conjoined. They're at the same location in the sky. And the ancient Kemetans believed that or viewed this conjunction of the sun and the moon as the union of the masculine, which is solar, and the feminine, which is lunar. So these were the union of the masculine and feminine principles and numerous legends of gods that made it or that came together that were husband and wife or consorts. One such theme in Kemetan ceremony is the union of Heru, whose Greek name is Horus, for those of you who may be more familiar, and Het Heru, whose Greek name is Hathor. And this ceremony that they do at Denderah, I don't know if you're familiar with the term Denderah, is the location of where Het Heru's temple was located. So they have the ceremony, which is the union of Heru and Het Heru, memorialized in this great festival that they celebrate at the temples there of Denderah in particular. And it was held on the new moon. And this is held on the new moon. I don't want to get into the solar calendar part. But this event is symbolized in the crown of the goddess, you know, the solar disk that is in her crown. If you've seen pictures of Het Heru with the two horns, and she has the lunar orb that's in between. So at the new moon, you know, there's no visible light. But by day three, you will see, you know, with the conjunction of the sun and the moon, you can see the first crescent of light that appears. About 7 days later, or by the seventh day, you have the first quarter of the moon that's apparent and it's illuminating. And then between days 14 and 15, you'll have a full moon. So, and then, you know, obviously you have the reverse that's happening after that. You have the full moon going to the new moon. But this is a full cycle, right? And so the Tibetans really viewed this as a very powerful time, or just the calendar, the moon as being very powerful and symbolic of the union of the masculine as well as the feminine. So in ancient Kemet, there is, let's see, they actually have a calendar of 354 days in a year that's based on the moon. I think they ended up adding something additional to it or whatnot to make it work out, but it's very close to the 356 days that we, you know by the Gregorian calendar as of now. And this whole practice of the moon, of the full moon, I'm sorry, not the practice of the full moon, but the following the moon and how important it is, you can see it in other traditions that were influenced by ancient Kemet. So, for example, in the Jewish tradition, you have Passover, right? So Passover is calculated as the first full moon following the spring equinox. And then for Muslims, you have the what's the called the journey to Mecca. I think it's the Haji might be a term that's used for that. This is also determined by the first full moon following the spring equinox. And then for Christians, Easter is celebrated on the first Sunday after the full moon following the spring equinox. And then you have, and so, you know, all of, excuse me. So you have all of this connection with how important the moon is in different cultures. So moving right along, let's get a little bit more deeper into this in terms of how things were symbolized and mythologized in ancient Kemet. So typically the Egyptians or the, I'm sorry, the Kemetans had viewed the lunar rhythms, as we call it, as feminine in nature. The lunar cycle of growth and diminishment, or, you know, it growing and diminishing, is uniquely embodied in the saga or the mythology of Asar, the god. His Greek name is Osiris. You know, he's a deity that's closely associated with the variable phases of the moon. So if you know about the legend of what happened with Asar and his brother Set, so Set was pretty much jealous of Asar, right, because he got a lot of attention, you know. People really celebrated him. He got a lot of attention from folks and people around him. Set was jealous of that, and so he actually, one of the things that he did is that he played a trick on Asar. Basically, he built him a coffin and asked him to stand in it for his, this was like a birthday gift or something like that, and so Asar did that. And Set closed the casket, broke it up into 14 pieces, and spread it all across the world. And so at the time, Asar's wife is Aset, you know, and, you know, she was very upset about this and emotional, as anybody would have something like that happen to her husband. And so she and her sister Nebhet, or Nephthys, if you know her Greek name, set out to go find these 14 pieces and bring them back together, okay, to make him whole. And then as a consequence of this, Asar became the god of the underworld. And it's really interesting because this whole story symbolizes what happens with the different phases of the moon. It's really a lunar mythological story, or lunar legend in a sense, right? So what that means, basically Asar was magically restored through the intervention of the gods, you know, namely Aset and her sister. Also with the magic of Aset, she performed magic to put him back together. And with his life being renewed, he became the governor of the shadow world. So that's why I said the lord of the underworld or the governor of the shadow world. And this is a vast, invisible region beyond the material world where all ancestral souls reside. So consequently, it was believed that all return to the realm of this deity when physical life comes to an end, right? So this is what that story represents. And actually, I didn't know about this. I think I was talking with Naki, I was talking with you about that, that this is something new. I knew about the story of him being chopped up into 14 pieces and spread throughout the world and, you know, was brought back through magic and things of that nature. But I didn't know that that was symbolic of the moon, because you have 14 days to the full moon, from the new moon to the full moon, about 14 or 15. Some people, some ancient people view the full moon as being the 15th day. I think in ancient Egypt it might just be 14 or something like that. But there you have the understanding of that cycle. So the astrological rhythm of the moon is woven into this myth, you know, as I said before. The 14 members, right, the 14 pieces of Asar's body. Let's see, what is the connection here? Let me just keep going. So Asar assumes the pulse of the lunar principle in nature as a function of reoccurrence in the life cycle and the power of transcendence. So in other words, what it means is that, so he goes through this lunar cycle, right, that is natural, from going from the new moon to going to the full moon. In other words, that's the time where Isis and her sister are finding the pieces and putting them back together to make him whole again, you know. And that for even though the moon is subject to waning and waxing light, I'm sorry, let me go back. So he transcends this kind of predicament that happens to him. That's what that transcendence. So that's why he becomes associated with the life cycle, you know, the different phases of the moon, and then also the transcendence of basically what had happened to him. He was put back together, and then he became the governor of the shadow worlds, as they say, the worlds where the ancestors are believed reside. And it's a world where ancient Kemets believe that we return once the body has moved on or has expired. So that gives you an idea of, you know, how things were looked at from the ancient Egyptian perspective. I'd like to continue by talking a little bit more about certain aspects of the moon or the phases of the moon according to the ancient Kemet. So one is the new moon evokes the inauguration of enterprises, enhances the growth of new endeavors, such as the founding of a temple or the commencement of certain journeys. There's like a symbiosis, as with the symbiosis with the sun and the moon, this period represents the planting of the physical seed in the womb of time, which will come to fruition as the full moon. When the body is inhabited by the spirit and the dark matter is illumined by the powers of life. So you might be wondering, okay, what is Shakti talking about? I'm actually getting some of this wonderful information from Rosemary Clark, who wrote the book, The Sacred Magic of Ancient Egypt, and I highly recommend this text. And basically what she's saying here is that, you know, what is the meaning of the new moon? So in ancient Kemet, there were certain things that they did according to the phase of the moon. So the new moon would be new enterprises. It's growth, right? It's when when there is no moon, and then it goes into, it waxes into the full moon. So things that you're starting, that you are building, whether it's a temple or you're going on a journey, the best time, the most optimal time, according to the ancient Kemetans, was to do it during the new moon. Okay. What about there's another example. If you look at the eclipse, now this is really interesting because there's a connection here with the Vedic astrology system in terms of their moon phases. The lunar eclipse, which occurs at the full moon, is the event that recalls the murder of Asar, as discussed before, by his brother Set, and symbolized by the face of the moon that is diminished by the earth's shadow. So these were regarded as particularly dangerous times, and it called for the highest magic that the ancient Kemetans used to avert the reign of Set. So what is part of the reason why Set did what he did? He was jealous of his brother Asar, but also at the same time, Set represents the power of chaos, right? Death, for sure, because he also represented the desert in a lot of places. You know, a lot of things die in the desert because there's, you know, not enough water, not enough food, things, you know, these kind of natural things. But it's Set trying to take over from Asar, right? So, in other words, during the lunar eclipses, the ancient Kemetans would do high magic, or just magic, right, to avert the reign of Set and his powers of chaos. The lunar eclipse symbolized that. The beautiful moon, which is represented by Asar, or the faces of Asar, is being shadowed at this time during a lunar eclipse. And so it's a great time of chaos. And so that's why they did rituals to avert those kinds of chaotic energies from taking over. And it's really fascinating because it speaks to what is also done in India, I think at least in southern India, in the Vedic astrology tradition. Lunar eclipses are considered to be inauspicious. That means they're unlucky days. They even don't recommend that people go outdoors to be a part of the, you know, to go out. You know, a lot of people like to go out and they take a look at the lunar eclipses and things of that nature. And actually, the Vedic astrologers would tell you, don't do that. This is not a really good time to be out there. And because during the lunar eclipse, it's considered to be time where nefarious things occur. Okay. So in other words, So with the ancient Kemetans, what they did when they did their rituals to avert the reign of Set, it helped to empower Asar, right, during this time. So there's a direct connection even between their food offerings, plant and animal food sources, to help restore Asar, to restore his breath, as it's called, the restoration of his breath, his revival, the revival of his form, and then also the conception of his son Heru, because as a part of the story where Aset brings Asar back to life, she actually becomes impregnated by Asar, and the son Heru, or Horus, you may be familiar with his Greek name, is born 14 days later. So all of these, you know, stories, this is one thing that I love. I kind of wish I went back to my graduate school years and studied mythology, because mythology is very fascinating. It's not just a story about, you know, what god did something bad to another god kind of thing, but there's always meaning to it, and it's usually connected to natural phenomena, like the moon, for example. Okay, so that's the perspective of ancient Egypt in terms of their lunar calendar, or the lunar rhythms, and that's very similar to what we find in the Vedic traditions, especially in southern India, in terms of what the moons represent. Now, the great thing about the, in the Vedic tradition, is that not only is this an ancient practice in terms of having a lunar calendar, but it still remains today. So this is something that's been going on for, you know, centuries, right, for millennia. And what I'm going to do is to talk about the different certain moon phases and what they mean. So I was talking about the new moon phase and what that meant, you know, the beginning of projects and journeys and building of temples and ancient Kemet. In the Vedic tradition, there's a little bit of a slight difference. And just to let me begin with, the moon is also symbolized as your mind. And so it's a representation of your mind, which is why during the full moon, you know, your mind is on blast. Whatever it's thinking or whatever's going on, it gets amplified, right? But during the new moon, there is no reflection of that light. It is considered to be a time where you can release energy blocks, you can break through any things that are challenging you at that time. This is, you know, from the Vedic perspective, the Vedic astrological perspective. And I'm not a Vedic astrologer, but this is some of the information that is put out there about the new moon, about the different moon phases. This is a way that you can pave your way ahead for success and bliss. So it's very similar. It's about removing negativity and transforming your consciousness. So it's very similar to how the ancient Kemetian people also viewed the new moon. So the new moon for the Vedic astrologers is a special time that provides you a great opportunity to connect with your ancestors for solving your problems. It is also a time to connect with certain archetypes, archetypes meaning gods and goddesses, such as Durga. Durga is a goddess we talked about. If you've ever seen an image, you can Google her, and you can see an image of a beautiful goddess sitting on the back of a lion or a tiger, and she has 8 arms and she has 8 weapons. She's considered to be a great warrior, okay? And there are other archetypes too, other like Karpasami, Hanuman. These are kind of warrior types, warrior archetypes. And these archetypes have the power to destroy negativity and also to protect you from negativity as well. As I talked about, the new moon is a powerful time to connect with both your maternal and your paternal ancestors. And in fact, in the Vedic traditions, they suggest that you perform what's called a ritual called the Tarpanam, which is where you're offering, making an offering to your ancestors, helps them to kind of move into the light, meaning that, not that they're not in the light, will move up to a higher level of consciousness. Sometimes ancestors kind of hold on to the physical realm, and then they can cause problems. Not that they mean to do it on purpose, not that they're malevolent necessarily, but just that, maybe certain addictions, certain things they were used to, after their body had died and passed on, they're still connected to these addictions, or, could be something that's negative or something like that. So performing this Tarpanam ritual remove those blocks, and it helps them to go up to a different level of consciousness, a higher level of consciousness. And why is that important? Because then it can bless you and they can help you along your path. So that's the meaning of the new moon. Another moon phase that's important as well is the fourth moon, and that is a time to remove obstacles to your path of success. So if you're familiar with Ganesha, the elephant-headed god in the Hindu pantheon, the fourth moon is connected to Ganesha, and it is a time to remove obstacles. Elephants are great at removing obstacles, or at least Ganesha is. If you've ever seen a picture of or video of an elephant removing a tree, they're very strong, right? The big creatures are very strong. So, yes, they can remove obstacles. I've even seen, this is really funny, where I saw a video of, I think this was there was a border area. So, basically, it's like a road that's going from one country to the other, and I'm thinking I don't know if it's Korea and China. I can't remember, but it's in one of those countries there. Anyway, there was a border, kind of like a border guards, and you have this gate and whatnot. And so they had an image of, on the video, you had this elephant that went straight through this border. I mean, they didn't try to stop it or anything like that, but this elephant just crossed the border, and that's the symbolism of Ganesha, in the sense that, whatever man puts up as this is a border, you can't cross it, Ganesha is the one who says, oh, no, yeah, we can cross this border. This is not necessary. So that's kind of symbolic in that video, in a sense. Anyway, I digress. During the fourth moon, there are Hindus that seek the blessings of Ganesha in a sense of smashing their objects that keep them from progressing, from succeeding. So that's the power of the fourth moon. Jumping ahead to the sixth moon, this is a time for beauty, success, and vitality. So activities that are around beauty, success, and vitality are it would behoove you to do those during the sixth moon if you're following the Vedic astrology calendar. So the sixth moon is a powerful time for this kind of victory and success and vitality. It is a special time window of the month when the power of a particular god, his name is Murga, or I think Kartikeya is another name of his. He is a warrior deity, He is the son of Shiva, who is the supreme being, and his wife Parvati. If you don't know much about them, I'm not going to go into great detail, but basically they, in southern India, Shiva and Parvati represent the masculine and the feminine divine energies in the universe. They are like the mother and the father gods, right? And Murugan is the combination of the two of them together because he is their child. So anyway, a little bit of story about Murugan. He was born of the third of Shiva's third eye as a result of the union between him and his wife. And he was born out of this third eye of Shiva to destroy evil and to bring beauty and success and vitality to all of life. He is also associated, for those of you who are into the Pleiades star system, he is also associated with the Pleiades star system. And it is said that he was first brought up or cared for and nurtured by six of the stars in the Pleiades star system. They call them Kritikas, I think, or Kritikas, six women who nurtured him and whatnot. And then he was, you know, I guess in a sense, returned to Parvati, his mother, and his father, Shiva. And as a result of being taken care of by, I guess, six women, he had, six goddesses, he has six heads, which is interesting. And these heads have attributes, wisdom and detachment, strength, fame, wealth, and divine power. So that is what Murugan represents. And obviously, because he represents the third eye of Shiva, he also has domain over our third eye or our pineal gland, as some of you might know. If you see a picture of him, you'll see that he has a staff with this kind of, I don't know what to call it, but other than a spade, I've seen this on a card, and that spade represents the spade represents the third eye, and then the staff, because it's a long staff, if you take a look at it, that would be the Kundalini. So it goes from you know, it's a long staff, and you have the spade that represents the third eye. That has to do with the energy, the Kundalini that goes from the base of the spine up to our third eye. Okay? That's a connection there. But anyway, so the important thing that you do during a six moon phase is you work with beauty, success, and vitality, any activities that are surrounded by those areas. It's a good time to do that during the sixth moon. Jumping ahead to the eighth moon is a good time for success and prosperity. There's a particular archetype that's associated with it. I won't get into all the details, so I just kind of want to go through this a little bit quickly, but let's see. This has something to do with, what I say, good times of success and prosperity, basically. The archetype that it's associated with, his name is Kala Bhairava, and he is the archetype of time. And one of the advantages of being in connection with that archetype in southern India, is that, you know, he can deal with issues of procrastination. So if you're procrastinating on things, you know, during the eighth moon, you can contact him. His energy is present, you know, during that time. And then you can ask for his help and his blessings to deal with issues of procrastination, or if you want things to move quickly, he can do that as well. Going ahead to the 11th moon phase, the 11th moon phase in a Vedic calendar is associated with is a great time to create a life of ecstasy, abundance, and prosperity. And it's also for manifestation. If you're trying to manifest something, if you're material growth, and also it's a day of spiritual awakening. This particular day is associated with Vishnu. Vishnu is the supreme being. If you have seen him, he's blue. He usually has, I think, four arms, one that has a disc that's kind of rotating. He might have and other kinds of weapons or whatnot, or flowers in his hand. You can Google him. You'll see a picture of him. And he is about, he's actually the sustainer of the universe. He helps to sustain life as it is. And he lives in a world of unlimited abundance. And he can actually bring that to you during the 11th moon. I said the sustainer of life. They also call it the preserver and the maintainer of the universe. So in Hinduism in particular, the balance between the forces of creation and preservation and destruction is maintained by a holy trinity, which is Brahma, the creator, Vishnu, the maintainer or preserver, and Shiva, the destroyer or transformer is another way of looking at that. Vishnu is the all-pervading essence of all beings and the master of past, present, and future. He supports and sustains and governs the universe and all of life, et cetera, et cetera. So that is, so the 11th moon phase is associated with creating a life of ecstasy, abundance, and prosperity. So those of you who are magical people out there, if you're doing spells about that, or if you want to have special prayers or whatnot to any of the archetypes, the angels and the gods and goddesses out there, the 11th moon, if you're following the Vedic calendar, is the best time to do that. So I've got two more main moon phases to talk about, and that is the 13th moon. So the 13th moon is a time where you dissolve negativity and get rid of old habitual patterns. It's the time to really awaken to a new reality, right? A lot of times we get kind of bogged down into certain habits and things that are just destructive. You know, like, for example, if you're watching too much TV or if you're just kind of flipping channels and not really watching anything in particular, you're just kind of going from channel to channel. Channel surfing is what we call it. That can be seen as a negative pattern, right? That kind of thing. There are a lot of negative patterns that are out there, so I don't want to get into, don't need to get into all of them, but you know what they are. But they're old habits that we get into. And so the 13th moon in the Vedic system is the time to dispel of that and to get rid of all those old habits and that negativity around that and awaken to a new reality, to start something new, to do something different. Okay? It's also a great time to reduce any negative karma. So, you know, in India, in Hinduism and Buddhism and things of that nature, they have this concept of karma. And everybody has their, you know, karma can be good or bad, but typically when they're talking about getting rid of karma, they're talking about the negative aspects of karma, things that are holding you back, that are keeping you from proceeding. So the 13th moon is actually a great time. The 13th moon is called Pradosham, and Pradosham is a time where you can remove karma. So those of you who are familiar with a Shiva Lingam, if you don't know what that is, you can, you know, check it out on the internet. A Shiva Lingam, which is the representation of Shiva, pouring water over the Shiva Lingam on the 13th moon is a Vedic practice of dissolving negativity and old habitual patterns. Basically, it's negative karma, right? So that is the time to do that. Then there's the full moon. So the full moon is a wonderful time. And so even though, and unfortunately, when people don't know about the moon phases and what they mean or how they can affect us, you know, and that, like I said, in the U.S., the emergency rooms are full during the full moon, but it's actually a phase of creativity, of abundance and prosperity. And it is when the moon is in its fullest state, its fullest manifestation or abundant state, right? This is a great time for working with your powers of creativity, for abundance and manifestation of all your desires. This is a time with in southern India, the full moon is the time where enlightened beings and all of the archetypes, the gods, the goddesses, and angels are abundantly available on the earth plane and can be of help to you during the full moon time. It is a time where you can call on any of your gods and goddesses, any of your angels, and ask for help. It is especially great if you're manifesting or if you're creating abundance or anything that you're creating or manifesting, or if you want more of something, an abundance of something, of a particular kind of experience, the full moon phase is a fantastic time for this to happen. So that gives us an interesting perspective about the moon and its importance and how it affects our lives. Having a lunar calendar, in India in particular, they have a lot of, if you've seen the pictures of the temples and the celebrations that they have, sometimes they will take an idol, like a statue of their god, and they may parade it around the town or the city. They may even dip it in the water as part of the ceremony or whatnot. And all of these events occur around certain moon phases. They actually have a completely separate calendar than the regular Gregorian calendar, and it's all based on, you know, what phase of the moon is going on. So that's where you have you have that importance of the moon and how significant it is. You know, and one of the great things about India in particular is that they have continued the worship of the moon in its different phases over all these, all these hundreds of years and from since ancient times. You know, and it's something that you can also, as well, for yourself, take a look and research. You don't have to if you're not into the Vedic astrology, then you can just look up what are the different meanings, the phases of the moon. There are different moons that we even talk about here in the Western world, like the blue moon or the blood moon, and, you know, take a look at what those meanings are. And you can plan your activities, your daily activities, in accordance with that. I mean, this practice can get it can be as simple or it can be as complicated. I won't say complicated, as detailed as you want it to be. I know of some people who look at the moon phase every day. And they look at, okay, what are the most auspicious activities? What are the activities I can do where I will have the most energy, divine energy or cosmic energy that's involved? What kind of activities should I not do during that time? And they will actually schedule as much as they can around the different phases of the moon. And that's something that you can do as well. And you don't have to be as detailed with every single phase, but the full moon, that's a wonderful time to be able to connect and think about what are some of the things that you want to have happen in your life. What are you trying to create in this life? Maybe it's creating more peace. Maybe it's you're looking for another home or house, or looking for a house. Maybe it's a time that you're trying to manifest a car or something. These are times where you want to utilize the full moon in particular to help you to achieve what you're trying to manifest in your life. So, you know, that's how it goes in terms of the full moon, the different moon phases, and how important it's been in the lives of ancient peoples as well as people in the present time. Naki, I don't know if you are there.
I'm here.
Add anything? Oh, okay, because I called on you before. You didn't respond.
Oh, I'm sorry. I might not have heard you, but I'm here.
Oh, that's okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, did you want to add anything else about the
No, I don't know anything about the big moon. I was going to present something about the various phases as we know them over here on the West, like the waxing, the waning, the giving us, that sort of thing.
Good.
Huh?
Yeah,
I don't know anything about
that. That's what I was talking about.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't prepare because Vedic moon doesn't have a whole lot to do with that. So I enjoy what you presented, Shakti. That was awesome.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. What kind of moon phases do you find important in your spiritual life? Like what?
Well, I'll be honest.
Sure.
I don't do a lot with the various the givenesses and the waning and waxing pieces. I do almost always, I won't say always, but almost always do something for the new moon and then something for the full moon. Now, specifically, those two phases are significant because the new moon represents the creative processes, as far as I'm concerned. I know it's a little bit different than what you said. But you've got the blackness, so the void. So if you, we kind of hit on this on the previous show. If you think about the womb or the darkness, the void from which everything, I believe, came, that's the perfect space, that's the canvas to create anything you like. It's almost like you have a blank slate.
Right.
So from that void or from that nothingness or no-thingness is everything possible. So in the new moon phases, I like to set intentions. I like to, you know, look at anything I might want to release. I like to look at anything I want to bring in, any habits that I might want to, you know, also let go of. So the new moon is, it's all about the creative phases, the creative processes. And then, of course, the full moon is the culmination of what you petitioned for, what you asked for, what you've done ritual for during the new moon. So the full moon says yes. It's almost like the harvest. It's almost like the reaping of what you've sown. So it's the culmination of all the energy that you've built up all month while you were waiting for the moon to go from the voided phase to, you know, growing bigger and bigger and fuller and fuller. So that's kind of how I do my moon work. It's very powerful because I, you know, I layer my work with, you know, crystals and candles and herbs and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think looking at those various phases in Vedic astrology was beautiful. I remember when I did my first tribute to Ganesha on the 4th and the 14th moon. I don't know if you mentioned the coconut ritual, which you probably did. I just missed it. It's trying to storm over here in my way, but it was a beautiful thing, and I really remember getting great benefit and just feeling really good. And you bust a coconut or roll a lime.
Right. I was going to explain what the coconut ritual is. I didn't talk about that for the 4th and 14th, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, go ahead and explain that because that might be something that they might be interested in. Our viewers might be interested in because that's a beautiful
offer. Yeah, so basically it is. The coconut is used as a surrogate for ourselves or our mind, right? A lot of times we have a lot of traffic going on in our mind. Most of our thoughts are not productive thoughts if we're not paying attention to them. And so in the Vedic traditions, you would take a coconut and you would either roll it on your head or you just place it on your forehead or roll it on your shoulders or neck, maybe your heart area, maybe even areas that have, you know, you have physical pain or something.
Mm-hmm.
But basically you imagine that the whatever negative energy that you're experiencing goes into that coconut, and then you take the coconut and you smash it on the ground. And you can smash it anywhere as long as, you know, be sure to pick up the pieces. You just don't want to, you know, smash it someplace in an open area and just leave it. And then, you know, you wash your hands and whatnot afterwards, right? And so if you've never done that before, you should try it because it is something that I've had people do this. We just did this for a community group. We have our spiritual community group that's based on Dr. Pillai's teachings and whatnot. And we just did this on Saturday where we broke coconuts because it was the 14th moon? It was the 14th moon. And so we rolled it and we broke it on the side. And people they just loved it. Oh, this is so exciting. I feel so lighter. I've done it with one coconut. One coconut is good enough, or you could do even more. But that's basically the coconut breaking ritual there.
Awesome.
So... Yeah. But, you know, actually, Naki, a lot of what you described is very much like the ancient practices. I mean, in ancient Kemet, that's what they did during the new moon. They set their intentions. It was all about beginning of journeys or creative projects, you know, the start of a building of a new temple.
Right.
So it's exactly the same as you doing your intentions, you know, and things of that nature. Full moon would be the, you know, coming together of the god and the goddess, or the masculine and the feminine. And it's all the positive things during that time. So the full moon was celebrated. So, and you know, whether you're talking about Vedic astrology, it's same thing in with the Vedic system as well. It's the new moon is a time to remove whatever negative karma you have in order to build, you know, in order to start your road to success kind of thing. So it's the same thing. Yeah. It's really not that much different. You know, a little bit of a different interpretation, but, you know, and that's wonderful. I think it's fantastic. I believe, you know, I'm a person, I don't know about you, Nikki, but I really believe that the ancient people had a real, many of the ancient peoples had a very strong knowledge of spiritual science is basically what it is, and how the moon affects us, how the planets affect us. These are not odd things or things that people were making up. These were observances over hundreds of years. This is, you know, this. Think about it. They were watching the moon they'd look at the moon every night. They would even record or remember what were the things that happened. What would happen with, you know, we talked about how the moon, we know how the moon actually controls the waves. Like I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and, you know, if you're having strong waves or you're having low tide or high tide, all of that is related to the moon, and people observe that, you know, because they were very connected to nature and they understood their connection with nature. So, you know, it's just wonderful to have these practices continue and to continue these practices. So the moon or the phase of the moon is a very powerful time and where you can really help to bring more celestial power or divine power to what you're doing, you know, in your life. So, well, let's see. I think that's pretty much all I had to offer today. I hope that you guys were able to understand what I was talking about. And maybe maybe you learned something new. I certainly did. And we thank you so much for being on the Goddess Guidance Show with us today. We hope that you have a wonderful, wonderful goddess-filled week. Please come to see us at, we have a Facebook group called the Goddess Guidance Show. You can come and join, and we pretty much, you know, let everybody in, and you can come ask us questions or talk about the moon phases and, you know, what you do for the moon. Or you can just come and ask us questions, you know, anything psychic or things of that nature. I know Nikki has had some questions here and there. You can come join us there. If you'd like to know about more of what shows that are coming up on Psychic Talk Radio Network, which is the radio network that we're on here, go to psychictalk.net/upcoming, and it'll tell you all of the shows that are coming up and give you a little bit of information about, you know, what will be discussed. If you want to know about the host, you can do psychictalk.net/host. And you can find out more about, you know, who the different hosts are and read about their biographies and things of that nature. If you're not going to remember what the website is, those particular links, just go to psychictalk.net and they'll give you all the information, the little buttons you can click on. You can hear some of our older shows here on the Goddess Guidance show, or you can listen to the past shows. You can find out what's coming up, you know, who the hosts are. And also, if you're interested in becoming a host yourself, maybe there's something, a spiritual topic or topics that you like to talk about, maybe you have a spiritual skill, please be sure to click on that button about becoming a host. This is a wonderful network to be a part of. Our executive producer is really great at, you know, if you want more information about how to work with or grow your spiritual business, this is an opportunity to do so. Just go to psychictalk.net, look at Become a Host, and then you can find out more. Maybe you want to be a host with us meaning on our network. And we're a really great team, too. We're very supportive. All the hosts are supportive of each other and the things that we like, and, you know, we chat from time to time. So hopefully you'll join us if you have an interest in that, or at least check it out. And, again, thank you for attending the Goddess Guidance Show. Have a goddess-filled week. Would you like to say goodbye, Nikki?
Yes, I would. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget to incorporate the goddess in everything you do. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.